We observe today not a victory of party, but a celebration of freedom.
Across the UK, online and on DAB, the Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
The Human Zoo, where they don't hide away the sick animals.
Dangerous mid-morning debate with the great dictator.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham.
Stand to attention when I'm talking to you!
On Talk Radio.
This mess!
Good morning and welcome to the Independent Republic of Mike Graham right here on Talk Radio. So now we have officially entered the final furlong. All manifestos are out there, even the odd contract with the people, and we know what the choices are that we are facing on December the 12th. This weekend, Boris Johnson laid out the Tory plans and put the NHS very firmly at the heart of a document entitled Get Brexit Done. But can anyone honestly say they are actually paying attention to any of these announcements? Free broadband from Labour, 50,000 nurses from the Tories, a skills wallet from the Lib Dems, an end to HS2 from the Brexit Party, 100 billion quid to fight climate change from the Greens, and no Trident missiles from the SNP. Can we just get it over with now, please? 0344 499 1000. Coming up, we'll hear from former Prime Minister Tony Blair, who seems to think Boris Johnson can't be trusted. Pretty good coming from him. And, of course, that Brexit is still a bad idea. We'll find out why the big energy companies are moving abroad to avoid the Corbyn nationalisation plan. And we'll examine a very bizarre spy story from Australia. 0344 499 1000. Also, we'll get stuck into this latest announcement, the breaking news that's just happening. Very London-centric, you might say, that Uber are not going to have their licence renewed. So an awful lot of people who use a transportation company in order to get to work and home again in the small hours of the night, cheaper and much better than some other ways of doing so, are not going to have that option anymore. And what's going to happen to all the people who actually drive Ubers, these people who actually are employed and make a living by driving cars and driving people around? I don't understand why they've done it. We'll get into that as well. 0344 499 1000. If you're a black cab driver, you're probably very, very happy indeed. You're listening to me, Mike Graham, right here on the fastest growing radio station in the world. It's Talk Radio.
A mid-morning dance with the devil.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham
on Talk Radio.
Let the sky fall when it crumbles. We will stand tall, face it all. Together, let the sky fall when it crumbles. We will stand tall.
0344 499 1000 is the number. We'll take loads more of your calls coming up in the next hour, of course. We'll also be talking about the remarkable situation in a cinema up in Birmingham, where basically there was a brawl involving various youths and various implements of destruction, including a machete, would you believe, which people seem to be thinking is a very normal activity nowadays at the weekends, which certainly should not be regarded as far as I'm concerned. But we'll be talking about that, plus a lot more as well. 0344 499 1000. We'll keep taking your calls on the manifesto mania that's going on, everything being promised but the kitchen sink, it would seem, at the moment. But right now we're going to talk to Nigel West, European editor of the World Intelligence Review and an intelligence historian, of course, as well, because a fascinating story has come our way from Australia, where it would appear that the Chinese authorities, or certainly the Chinese sort of spying organisation, was attempting to recruit an Australian national of Chinese descent who was they wanted to stand for Parliament in the elections in May. He reported that he had been approached and offered basically £500,000 to do so, and a load of money to support his campaign to get into Parliament in Canberra. He's been found dead. And now the Australian authorities are investigating. Let's talk to Nigel and find out what he makes of it. Nigel, very good morning to you.
Good morning.
Fascinating story, this, because I suppose my first thought when I read it was, you know, here we are busily looking at Russia to see what interference they can have in our election processes, and maybe we've been looking the wrong way.
Yes, and we don't know very much about the Ministry of State Security, really, or we haven't learned much since 1985, when we had another really good defector, top-level man, codenamed Plainsman.
Mm.
So Wang Liquang, who defected in Sydney, he's given sort of usual information about the targets for the Ministry of State Security, all of which is fairly well understood and conventional. But what's different is that instead of intimidating Chinese students who are studying in Australia, which is one of the tasks of MSS, he revealed that MSS actually was pursuing a positive democratic takeover, particularly in Hong Kong, Taiwan and Australia, where ethnic Chinese were being persuaded to stand on a pro-Beijing ticket.
Right. It's interesting, isn't it? Because I suppose because it's on the other side of the world, and I don't wish to sound like a flat earther here, but because it's on the other side of the world, it's kind of not in our minds that the Chinese have really got a big domination going on in Southeast Asia, generally speaking. Hong Kong we know about as well, but a big interest in Australia.
Oh, a big interest in Australia and the United States, 700,000 Chinese students in North America. And all of them will have had some contact in some way or sponsorship with the Ministry of State Security. And MSS is a quite different intelligence organization to the kind of orthodox organizations that we're used to in the West. Their targets are unusual. Falun Gong, the Uyghurs, Taiwan, the democracy movement, the Tibet activists. These are political targets rather than legitimate strategic intelligence long-term targets.
And as far as this particular case is concerned, what do you make of the way that it's kind of played out? Because this man, Mr. Zhao, who was a quite wealthy car dealer, apparently, was approached, I presume, sometime last year, went to the authorities to tell them what had happened, and was then found dead earlier on this year.
Yes, MSS, I'm afraid, has a very sinister reputation, and one of the things that Wang has told ASIO, which is the Australian intelligence organisation, is about the disappearance of booksellers, five booksellers in Hong Kong, and they were peddling anti-regime literature, and they became targets. So in Australia, what Wang is going to tell us, really, is the inside story from his position under commercial cover in Sydney. He's going to tell us everything about the MSS activities right across Australia, including this rather sinister dimension of getting ethnic Chinese to join the local political structure.
Yes, I mean, the guy in question, Mr. Zhao, was already, I think, a member of the Liberal Party. But do you suspect that this is going on elsewhere, then, that they're trying to get sort of a foothold in some way in governments in foreign countries?
Well, we've certainly seen that in Hong Kong. We've not been aware of it, as far as I know, in other countries, and it hasn't happened in the United States, which is the principal MSS target for long-term political reporting.
Right.
So Wang is going to be an enormously valuable asset and will, at some stage, be lent to other intelligence and security organizations across the West and will be advising services on the latest MSS thinking, which is a closed book to most Western intelligence agencies because of the way they operate and because they only use ethnic or mainly only employ ethnic Chinese and approach ethnic Chinese. It's very difficult to run double agents against them or use the kind of normal tactics that you would deploy in a counterintelligence target.
Right. And what do you make of what the Chinese will do now about Hong Kong? Because obviously we've seen the violence, we've seen escalations of that from time to time. It seems to sort of ebb and flow depending on, you know, what is going on the streets. Now they've had this effectively a referendum, isn't it, on the governance of Hong Kong, which has been basically in the form of a local election for councillors. But basically 80% or so of the councillors have been won by the rebels, if you like, by the people who are taking to the streets.
Yes, it's very difficult to know because, of course, the Communist Party of China would like to take a hard-line approach, but I think that there are modernists who take the view that another Tiananmen Square in Hong Kong would not only create severe problems for the People's Republic overseas and their investments, but would provoke the democracy movement on the mainland. And that's what they're really concerned about. The whole of the country is on the move. There is this very dramatic demographic move from country to town. And that is going to create instability in the future. And the Chinese Communist Party is very well aware of that, but they don't want to provoke the democracy movement any further than is necessary on the mainland. And a bloodbath in Hong Kong would do precisely that. So they've exercised a degree of restraint, which is pretty unusual, given the turmoil and the very bloody history of the country in the past.
Yeah, well, this is what's interesting for me about China's kind of role in the world, because while on the one hand they're trying to become more kind of commercially viable and much more westernised, if you like, but on the other hand, we then see the other story today about these Chinese detention camps, which are being described as a fabrication and fake news by apparently the Chinese embassy in London. But, you know, it's still quite a dangerous place, isn't it?
Not only that, but you've got a million Muslims in the northwest of the People's Republic who are in effectively what they call re-education camps, what we would call concentration labour camps.
Right.
And every time you buy something cheaply that has been manufactured in China, you have to bear in mind that this has been probably manufactured in some kind of a labour camp.
Yes.
Where they're not paying, not even minimum wages.
Mm. It's so astonishing, isn't it?
The Ministry of State Security, you have to bear in mind, has only one purpose in life, and that is not the protection of China itself, but the protection and the continuation of the Chinese Communist Party. It's the sword and shield of the party, and that's all it cares about. So the idea that it is a conventional economy or has long-term coexistence interests around the globe are somewhat mistaken, because you can actually see into the heart of the Communist Party through the intentions of the Ministry of State Security.
Yes. And so, I mean, I suppose if we are watching the Russians and whether they are interfering in our election processes, we should also be watching the Chinese quite carefully in this country.
Well, we have difficulties in this country. We are not a political target in the same way that the United States is or that Australia is. And, of course, we have huge Chinese investment in the United Kingdom. So we have a better relationship. And that, of course, explains the rather muted approach to Beijing over the issue of Hong Kong, where, of course, we have a direct role and responsibility as a guarantor of its special status. It's why we have been very restrained in our criticism of Beijing.
Mm.
Too much to lose.
Yes, quite. Nigel, thank you very much indeed. Fascinating story down in Australia. We'll keep tabs on that one and keep you updated as we find out more information. But effectively, a double agent has now given information to the government and also has been talking, excuse me, publicly about the sorts of things and the sorts of recruitment that has been going on in Australia by the Chinese government. Quite shocking stuff. 0344 499 1000 is the number. Coming up in the next hour, we're going to be talking about Tesco's concerns over its own brand honey, which has apparently been bulked up with cheap syrup. Also, we'll find out what the latest is from Down Under on the I'm a Celebrity front, and we'll be finding out why cinema chains have pulled this gang film after a brawl in Birmingham, which resulted in some people attacking the police with machetes, believe it or not. This is Talk Radio.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
Now, let's talk to Sefton Henry, who is the founder of Unity, a man we've spoken to many times before, very sensible on the sort of the wherewithal of what we should be doing about the youth culture in this country and whether we should be doing more or whether we should be offering more to them. But before we do anything about that particular movie, Blue Story, let's just have a listen to it, because this is a clip from the film which has now been banned.
Everybody have 5 seconds, come out of my house. 1, 5...
That switches, little brother.
We got each other's backs. I got yours, you got mine.
If you would have stabbed you, I would have stabbed him up. Like,
where you from?
Man's from Peck, no, I'm from what?
Is this heat, man? From what?
That's the trailer for the film Blue Story, which is basically a film about gangs. It's a fictional movie. It stars probably people who might actually be in gangs. But let's talk to Sefton Henry now and find out what he makes of it all. Sefton, a very good morning to you. Welcome.
Good morning.
I'm afraid since you and I spoke the last time, things haven't really got any better, have they?
No, they haven't, no.
I mean, to see such a young child almost holding that machete in that picture from Birmingham at the weekend. It was quite chilling, really. I mean, my first instinct is always to say, how is it possible to buy something like this? But, I mean, I know that's a bit naive, really, isn't it?
Yeah, no, I think they're even selling things like this on eBay and stuff like that. So
yeah.
It's really easy to get hold of.
Mm.
Yeah.
And what sort of things do you think are conjured up by these types of films? I mean, I'm not normally somebody for censorship. I'm old enough to remember when they made Boys in the Hood. I was living in America and I had to go and watch it for the Sunday Times, funnily enough, because there were gangs going to see Boys in the Hood and it was all breaking out into sort of gunfights because it was America, you know. And they had to stop showing that in certain parts of the country at certain times of the night. Is there a model that you can point to say that if kids are going to go and see a movie about gangs, they're more likely to try and act it out?
I'm not 100% sure because, like, you know, computer games is the same sort of thing. Do you know what I mean? Like GTA, people didn't just watch GTA and then start going around shooting people.
No.
So I would say that no. I don't think it's 100% to do with the movie itself, but I think it's just kids behaving badly. And in the culture that we're living, like society, and the way that certain, I don't know what it is called, certain things are glorified.
Yeah.
When these things are glorified, these young kids are picking up on it as if it's cool, it's something to be, and then that's why they're getting involved in it.
But isn't that already the case anyway, though? Because these kids are all on YouTube, you know, a lot of, certainly the London gangs, are filming themselves doing either music videos or just filming themselves acting out violent things and sometimes filming things which would normally be considered illegal, and everyone's watching it.
Yeah, so, that's not just London. That's also in Liverpool, Birmingham, Manchester, England, basically.
Mm.
Every young person is on YouTube doing the same thing.
Yeah.
So it's being glorified everywhere we go.
Mm.
But when it's in society, when it's like MOBO Awards, gang members getting MOBO Awards, or when you walk into McDonald's and you're hearing it, certain songs that are glorifying it, that's where it becomes systemic.
Yeah.
And people start growing up involved in it,
right.
or growing up to a part of it in their system, if that makes sense.
Yes, well, it's kind of normalising it, is what you're saying, that this is the way that they think everybody lives, or everybody that they know lives like that, so that's how they live.
And remember, they're kids, like, I'm working with a few young people now, and one of them's only 13.
Right.
The other one's, I think, around 12. So these young kids, they don't know much better, but they do know better, of course they do. But if you've grown up a certain way for so long, it's very difficult to unlearn some of those things.
Yeah, it is. And what do you think you can do about that? I mean, what do you say to these 13-year-olds and 12-year-olds about trying to unlearn some of this stuff?
So, for me, at Unity One Mind, or Go Viral _ with Unity on Instagram, if you check it out, you'll see some of the stuff that I'm doing and some of the stuff that I'm about. Basically, what I do is I renew their minds, and I try and make their minds think differently. Like, I take them to places that they probably never thought they could go.
Yeah.
I took some young people to Universal Music Studios, and I was with Percy Ascott, an actor, and Joe Van Wade.
Yeah.
And we went there, and they felt like they had gone to heaven.
Right.
It was an experience that they never thought they could ever have, but it was just down the road from them. But they didn't actually know that they could go there. And that's the sort of thing that I'm faced with a lot of young people. They don't actually know another life, and it's about bringing them out of that life and showing them, actually, you are welcome in society. You can come away from there, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
They get this. There's a thing where they feel discluded from society. They feel that, actually, no one wants them, no one cares about them, they're better off being bad, going to prison and so on. So then their lives, they don't have any meaning for their life. They don't feel, oh, my life's worth anything. So that's why they end up killing each other.
And that is because their lives, to them, presumably, seem quite cheap.
Yes. They don't feel that their lives mean much. But as soon as I've started working with some of the young people that I've worked with, and I've took them out of that arena and brought them into another sort of life, another way of living, they've changed quickly and they've said, you know what, I can actually make it in life.
And what about the change and how that is affected by the sort of things that you're doing? I mean, how fast can that happen when you've got these kids, if you take them to a place like that, a music studio? Is it instant or do you have to keep doing it?
The truth is, what's needed for me, I need more support and more resources to be able to be consistent in their lives. There's one thing for me to take them one day, but I need to be able to take them to several places within a month, if that makes sense,
right?
And keep that consistency going. If I can do things consistently, then in the matter of, I would say, 2 years of their life being consistent in their life, I can definitely see a massive transformation.
Right. And as far as the actual incident in Birmingham is concerned, it's not absolutely 100% right or sure at this moment that the film itself was the actual cause of the punch-up, you know, because there are lots of things going around on the internet and you can't always trust them. But, I mean, there's plenty of footage of the fight, which looks as though it's between a group of Sikh men who were being targeted for some reason.
Yeah, so I would say when a group of young people gather together, it's likely that some sort of drama is going to take place. And if it's that they all went to the cinema to watch that film, it's not necessarily that film's fault, but it's the gathering of those young people coming together.
Yeah.
And that could have happened anywhere. But they've kind of linked it to that film because obviously that film is about gangs.
Yes, exactly right. And it sort of has its reputation goes ahead of it, I suppose. But, I mean, I can't imagine that 100 people would all gather together to go and see a movie all at the same time. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, you've got to use a bit of common sense here. But the overriding problem, I suppose, Sefton, as well, is if they weren't at cinema, they could have been somewhere else and they could have been fighting somewhere else or they could have been stabbing each other somewhere else. And I mean, that problem is still there.
Yeah, and obviously that the film's not even about Birmingham.
No, it's about Lewisham, I think, in London.
Yeah, so it's about London. So I don't really believe that maybe it's to do with the film per se. And I believe that something needs to happen in the sense of I want to see more glorifications in some of the things that's doing good, like the good stuff that's happening. Like, why isn't that lifted up more so than Blue Stories and these stories or whatever it is? We need to lift up some things that are more positive.
Yes. And that is the problem, though, isn't it? I mean, we see in London now pretty much at least once or twice a week, maybe more, stabbings going on. We're not surprised anymore when teenagers are killed, stabbed to death because of some fight at a party. We've sort of almost become normalised to that.
Yeah, we've literally become desensitised to it.
Yeah.
The truth is, as well, is that I am a former gang member. I've lived that life, you know. I've been shot at, I've been stabbed in my lip, I've been stabbed in my ear, and I've been bricked and bottled a good few times.
Yeah.
And I've been to prison. I spent most of my years in prison. And for someone like me to now come out and be speaking these things that I'm saying, then it needs to be taken into consideration because I know that life. I've lived it. And what made me go into it and what made me stay in it and is the things that I now use to get them out of it, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, so now, you can talk to these guys as one of them, as it were.
Yeah, so I now know what made me go into it, so I use it to twist it round and get them out of it so they don't have those things. So one of those things that made me get into it is the culture. The culture was the main thing. And that's what I was saying. Society needs to recognize that whenever we lift up that culture, we are damaging our young people because they're going to be receptacle to it and they're going to end up going down that road.
Mm. Now, this particular movie is actually financed and made by the BBC, interestingly enough. I mean, does it matter, do you think, that these kinds of films are made?
So, in some sense, I'm working alongside Jovan Wade and Purcell Ascott, and they're both actors, and they do this thing with Fully Focused, Million Youth Media.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, they do films that are, some of their films are based on, like, gang lifestyle. But it shows the true intent behind the scenes. And I think that's so powerful. It shows the mother grieving over her son. It shows the reason why the young man is going through what he's going through. I think those films should be lifted up more so than the ones just glorifying the fact that they're fighting and so on. That's what I would say.
Because presumably, if there was to be a kind of a film culture about gang-related matters, you know, you might actually get some people out of the gangs and into the movie business.
Yes, that's what they're doing right now with this Fully Focused. That's exactly what we're doing. We've actually got an event today that I'm going to. It's an award-winning for some of the films that they've done, and it's actually got young people out of gangs into acting, and it's absolutely amazing. I can say that this one's actually working.
Okay.
And I like the fact that they use a storyline. They have a real storyline that shows the heart and the feeling behind everything.
Right. Will there ever be a time, Sefton, do you think, when we will not be talking about this kind of gang-like behaviour in our inner cities of this country? Because it seems to me that it's so kind of entrenched now that it's never going to end.
Yeah, it's sad because it's happening in places like Essex. I train government staff in Essex. I go into schools in Essex. I go into schools in, you name it.
Yeah.
I'm in the schools in different areas, and it's happening there also. So it's really scary what's happening. But the only way that we can really change it is by changing the narrative of what we see of young people. And if we can glorify some of these young people that are doing good all the time and show them, then we will show the younger generation that's coming up, this is the way to go and not that way.
OK. Well, let's hope so. Sefton, thanks very much indeed. Sefton Henry, founder of Unity, a youth organisation working on crime prevention, also trying to get some of these kids out of the gang culture. But the problem for me is this particular film, which may not have been the cause of the punch-up, nevertheless, but is clearly a story which is going to get people interested in gang culture and maybe glamorising it as well. And it is financed by the BBC, which, as far as I'm concerned, shouldn't be making films anyway. BBC is a television company. It should not be making movies, should it?
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
You know what you are? You are
sex bomb, sex bomb.
Yeah.
You're a sex bomb.
Uh-huh.
You can give it to me when I need to come along.
Give me sex bomb, sex bomb.
We are your election station here at Talk Radio. As you know, this is the place to have your voices heard. 0344 499 1000 is the number. That song always cheers you up, doesn't it? Story that came about over the weekend with a rather disturbing photograph, I have to say. Chris Froome, the cyclist, was pictured cycling on his bike naked. Now, I don't know about you, but I never want to think about anybody cycling naked. Whenever there's that naked cycling day out in London every summer, I think they have it, you just think, nah, that's really not something I would want to do. It's really not something I want to watch. It's actually not something I even want to think about. But Chris Froome, who is a magnificent specimen of a man, you have to say, has got very unusual muscles in as much as he is literally just a kind of speed machine. He looks like he's one of those exhibits in that bodies exhibition that used to go around where there's no skin on him. It's just like he's sinew and muscle and that's it. Apparently, he's gone vegan, like a lot of people have recently. And now we're being told a medical experiment which was done for a Netflix documentary proves that actually if you are vegan, you have a better sex life. We're going to talk to Carl Donnelly now. I don't know whether he's got a good sex life or whether he's even a vegan. Carl, a very good morning to you.
Morning, Mike.
Are you a vegan, Carl?
I'm vegan.
Are you?
I have categorically can say I've got a very good sex life. So,
yeah, well, I mean, I'd obviously want... I'd need some corroboration on that, obviously. But, I mean, I'll take your word for it for the purposes of this particular radio interview. This study, though, apparently men were given burritos containing grass-fed beef, organic chicken or organic pork one night, then plant-based replacement burrito containing soy and pea protein the following night, and then sort of asked them how they got on, really. So they didn't really film anything that they shouldn't have filmed, but apparently the men reported that they performed better after the vegan burritos. I don't know that I'd be doing anything like that after eating vegan burritos.
No, well, I don't think that is the most scientific of studies, to be honest.
It's not, is it?
I don't think you can really trust men to ever give a true account of what happened in a bedroom.
Well, there's very few men.
Notorious liars.
I mean, I imagine, Carl, there's very few men that if you said to them, what's your sex life like, are going to say it's awful, are they?
Exactly. You know, but I think, meat eaters or vegan, I don't think your diet or ethics really dictate your, you know, how you sort of report back from your sexual escapades.
Yes. Well, also, these guys are athletes, I think, in this study. And I mean, they used a picture of Chris Froome in the article in the Sunday Times that I saw. And I mean, if you're an athlete, you're a supremely fit individual in any event. So you're probably bound to be quite good at sex, if you'll pardon the expression.
Well, yeah, I suppose, but I reckon it's more to do. Like, I mean, I've been a vegan for 7 years,
have you?
And I reckon like it's probably more to do with the fact that your meals are a little less heavy. Do you
yes.
know what I mean? If you go for a big sort of steak, naturally, I think you're going to be a little bit more lethargic than if you eat a bloody bit of broccoli. So,
well, I don't know. I mean, some people will say that the protein in the steak might, you know, give you some extra energy.
I don't think protein does that. I watched that documentary, and I've got to say, I'm a pretty chilled vegan. Like, I watched that documentary and was like, this is very one-sided. Even though it's my side, I still thought, you know, I reckon they've made their mind up before making it, you know. So I think, it talks about how protein actually doesn't help with energy. I didn't know that. Apparently you want to eat carbohydrates for energy, so...
Is that right?
Pre-sex, I suppose you should probably just have an apple or something. That'll sort you out.
Well, but how about you just don't eat anything? You know?
You can't go into battle.
I mean, there are those who would say, and I'm not certainly saying that I'm one of them, that if you eat after having sex, you actually taste the food better.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Why?
You should try it.
Is it just heightened senses?
I think so, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah,
I suppose you need to check that with the person. You can't... literally just finish sex with your partner and then turn over and have a banana.
It's like that.
It's a bit rude.
You like that theme, that scene from Sex and the City where the guy keeps going off and having a shower after he's had sex and she hates it, right? And she's like, what's wrong with me?
I think after sex, you've really got to, you know, sort of be pretty careful about your behaviour. I once, my wife bought me a Fitbit for my birthday last year, and I kept it on like for the first week to check my sleep. We were in Turin on my birthday, and we obviously went out for dinner, and that night, you know, sort of in the bedroom, things happened, and literally post-coitus, I checked my heart rate on my Fitbit. And
how did that go down?
She wasn't too happy. Now.
Is she also a vegan, your wife?
She is, yeah. We went vegan, actually, weirdly, independent. Like, we knew each other as friends, but we both went vegan just before we met.
So is that right?
Some sort of weird coincidence.
So did you meet in a vegan cafe or something?
Yeah, we met at sabotaging a hunt. No, we weren't. We just met through other things. But yeah, we both happened to go vegan at around the same time.
Have you spoken to her about this particular study?
I haven't. No, I don't think I'd want to get her true feedback on my. I don't think we should ever get an honest report of how good we are. I think
yeah, because
we'll never live up to our expectations.
You don't really. Yeah, you don't want her comparing you to other people, really, do you?
No, especially non-vegans. I don't want to. I don't want to learn if they are. You know, if they have different styles.
Well, do you have? Do you find yourself with a different style now that you're a vegan, as it were, whatever that is?
I don't think I've changed anything particularly drastic.
Okay. Because the study here says basically the athletes in question said that their sexual arousal lasted between 3 and 4.77 times longer. I don't know how they work that out. It's 4.77. It's a bit odd, isn't it?
I know. Also, like, what do they mean by what do they, does that mean? How long they last, or is it how long they feel aroused for? It's a very vague.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not sure we could go there
for about 23 hours of the day. So. I don't know if that's veganism or just being a man.
Well, I think so. Yeah, it depends where you are as well, doesn't it? Or who you're with, presumably.
Mine's pretty much just standard.
Now, you're a comedian, Carl. How does being vegan sort of fit with that lifestyle? Because you have to spend a lot of time, presumably, in... I was going to say smoke-filled rooms, but and you can't do that anymore, but sort of, you know, alcohol-fueled situations where people are eating a lot of junk food.
Well, it's, but do you know what? In the 7 years I've been vegan, it's changed so much. When I first went vegan, it was almost impossible. Like, on the road, I had dinners that were, like, as if I was a five-year-old. Like, I had a bag of crisps.
Right. You know, an like egg and cress sandwich or something.
Well, but just because I couldn't find anything. Yeah, in town, I literally would have, like, I'd end up eating a dry pita bread.
I suppose you can't eat eggs, can you, if you're
vegan?
No,
I can't. So, yeah, so, like, when it's in that period...
I'd be useless as a vegan. I don't even know what you're supposed to eat.
Loads of people. Like, it took me a couple of years to fully work out. Like, I was still eating things like certain sweets that I didn't realise had beef gelatin in and stuff like that. So,
well, I remember during the CJD crisis, we had to find out when I was working for a newspaper all the things that had beef gelatin in them, and it was extraordinary.
Oh, it's mad.
What has it? You know,
and once you start learning, it's crazy. Like, yeah, the things there. So, I'm now pretty good at I've managed to avoid everything, but. Yeah, it took a good few years, but it's so easy now. It's because it's had this massive boom in the last couple of years. Like, I don't really know. I mean, it's good, but it's sort of really blown up to the point, you know, Greg's having a vegan sausage roll and stuff. No one saw that coming.
Well, that's kind of sensible marketing, though, isn't it? Because it's stupid to ignore it, really. You might as well jump on the bandwagon.
Oh, totally. Yeah, don't get me wrong. I don't think Greg's have done it for an ethical reason. I don't think they're suddenly going to start phasing out all their pasties. So, yeah, it's just good business. I guess. They can see the trend.
Right. Well, when's your next show? When can we give you a quick plug before we let you go to concentrate on your techniques?
Where am I? I'm at the London Comedy Store all weekend, Thursday, Friday, Saturday this weekend. Okay. A great club.
It is, but that's not helping anyone who wants to come and see you because it's in the past, and since they don't have a time machine, they can't go back and see you.
This weekend. This weekend.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, sorry, yeah, this Thursday.
Oh, I thought you said last weekend.
No.
Maybe I'm eating too much meat.
That's it. You've got the meat sweat.
Go on,
that's
see you later.
Another thing, actually, that helps with the sweat is you don't have meat sweats.
That's true.
Broccoli.
I really think you were doing it wrong before you were a vegan, though. It sounds to me you're not supposed to go out for like a big curry and then have sex.
I did used to eat a sausage roll every time just before starting.
Excellent. Carl, thanks very much indeed. Carl Donnelly, who's at the Comedy Store in London all week this weekend coming. Let's talk to Chris, who's in Selsey. Hello, Chris.
How you doing, Mike? How you doing?
Yeah, not bad, sir. What can I do for you?
I am not a vegan.
Okay.
I haven't got pointed ears.
Some people have got pointed ears. I think you should be having a go at them. Be careful.
Yeah, I'm not having a go, but it's a joke, Mike. You know, Vulcans, vegans.
Yes. No, I know. I got
it. Did you? Right. I mean, get to more serious matters. I am loaning my vote to the Tories.
Okay.
I was a Tory party member. I kicked him in touch with that idiot May. And I'm loaning my vote to them because I want Brexit.
Okay.
That's more important to me than anything.
And it's a short-term loan, I presume, is it?
Well, I would have gone Brexit party, but the thing is that they pulled the candidate from round here because she was a local lady and I'd have given her my vote. But to be honest with you, this is a temporary loan. And I'll tell you what, Johnson must perform. He must perform.
Yeah.
Because if he doesn't, he's in the touch.
Well, I mean, I think if the projections over this past weekend are correct, then he will be able to. I think it's all a matter of how many seats he can actually win in a majority. And if he can get those seats in a majority, then it's, I think it's a done deal, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I hope so. Yeah, I mean, listen, I've never known, like, such a bigger load of rubbish than this lot that are going for our votes. They are abysmal.
I know.
Absolutely abysmal. I mean, you're roughly the same age as me. In all my lifetime, I've never known a rabble like this.
I think you're absolutely right, and I think you speak for an awful lot of people, Chris. Thanks very much indeed. I think that's the problem. As I said last week, I was reminded of the David Letterman quote about the Mike Bloomberg, who's now running for US president, by the way. He's going to run as a Democrat. When he was running for mayor of New York against somebody whose name I've forgotten, Letterman basically said, you know, this is such a poor election. Unfortunately, only one of them can lose. Isn't that a pity? And that's true. I think a lot of people feel like that. But anyway, we are here at Talk Radio. We are your election station. We'll bring you more of that throughout the course of the day here.
Across the UK, online and on DAB, the Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
So if you enjoyed that, be sure to catch the whole show 10 to 1, Monday to Friday on Talk Radio, via DAB, online or via the Talk Radio app. If you have an opinion on the stories we cover, we'd love to hear from you. Call us 0344 499 1000 or tweet at Talk Radio during the show to have your say.
The Independent Republic of Mike Graham on Talk Radio.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.